The people who have installed solar panels to generate electricity on their homes tend to be quite enthusiastic and maybe just a little braggy about how small their electric bills are now. But plenty of us don't have the money up front for a solar installation at home. There are now options under the community solar program allowed by Oregon law and recently green-lighted by the release of rules for how the program will work. A year lapsed between the law passing and the rules coming out. It's a long year for solar supporters, including the Oregon Solar Industries Association, where Jeff Bissonette is the executive director and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So it did seem like community solar was poised to take off more than a year ago. I remember attending one presentation myself, which seems like it was even longer ago than that. What has slowed things down?
Well, you know, I think that there's definitely a lot of enthusiasm. And you know, as you talk to solar installers, which are among our members, as they go and look at, you know, the homes and rooftops that they're asked to come and say, hey, can I put solar panels up here? And for a wide variety of reasons, either, you know, there's too much shading or, you know, the roof isn't in good enough shape and the homeowner doesn't have the resources to upgrade it, or any number of reasons, probably somewhere between a third and a half of people who are interested can't put solar on their roof. You know, beyond that, there's also the matter of people not owning the roof or, you know, being able to put it on the roof if they live in a multifamily building. And so solar, community solar is kind of the answer to that, is to give people a chance to invest in solar, but see a bill credit on their electricity bill, just as if they had solar on their rooftop. And that idea has been bopping around for quite some time. And as you say, in Oregon, you got the legislative okay to pursue that. And then it takes a while to kind of figure out, okay, exactly how that works. We have the policy, but now we have to have the rules, and it took better part of a year to get those rules in place, and they are now in place. And now we're actually, you know, trying to figure out how long it can be until the rules can actually be implemented, and solar developers and others can start making offerings to customers. And so we're closer, and but I'd say we're still a few to several months off of customers actually getting their first chance to, you know, being able to compare projects and which ones they want to might want to participate in.
So how does community solar get initiated as envisioned in Oregon? I mean, does somebody look for a place to join in a community solar operation ready going? Can they start one themselves? I mean, what is the envisioned pathway here?
Yeah, there's a bunch, and the key word around the rules, as we talked about them, was flexibility, because nobody knew exactly what community solar in Oregon would look like. There's not kind of a clear model that's working, you know, anywhere else in the country. Other states have programs up and running. Minnesota is often referred to as probably the best one, but they had some bumpy points kind of getting things up and running. They do have one in California, they do have one in New York, but for a variety of reasons, none of them are sort of clear examples of models to follow precisely. So in some ways, we do have examples to look at, and hopefully mistakes that we can avoid that were made in other states. But it's not like there's a template or a toolbox to say, here's how you run community solar, A through Z. And so right now we have rules that are flexible as we wanted them to be. I think the most common way that people will get a chance to participate in a community solar project is that there is going to be, a developer or an organization that develops a project, and then you know, opens it up for participants or subscribers to that project. And that's going to be, again, the way that most people will find a community solar project. That said, it could be that people could be part of an organization, say a community center or a place of worship, where they want to put a project on their roof and open it up to their congregation or, you know, their broader community. And so that could be kind of a self-initiated community solar project. So I think we're going to see a couple of different, or probably several different, you know, approaches to project development, and then folks are going to get the opportunity to, you know, choose among them. And it could be that you just want the cheapest option, and so there's going to be, you know, larger projects that are developed that take advantage of economies of scale, and that will be very affordable. But they could be out in, you know, Eastern Oregon somewhere. Or, you know, somebody could say, yeah, I want something that I could actually go visit and say, yeah, I'm a part of that project. And, you know, it would be closer, but it could be smaller, and so therefore a little bit more expensive. And so there's going to be, you know, people are going to have to decide for themselves what the, you know, what they want from a community solar project, and there's probably going to be sort of the range of choices for them to choose from to meet those needs.
We're talking about community solar in Oregon. The Oregon Public Utility Commission just put out a set of rules to implement the law passed by the legislature a year ago. It's a situation where if you can't get solar on your own house, perhaps you can at least be a part owner of a solar system that's owned by other people generating electricity and therefore giving you a credit on your electric bills. Join the conversation with Jeff Bissonette, the executive director of the Oregon Solar Industries Association, at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I notice in discussions about community solar, we, you know, it's often, you mentioned community centers. I see schools, libraries could also be involved in this. I wonder if, can local governments actually initiate this, Jeff? Can they be the ones who start the process and say, hey, we'll put some panels on our roof and start selling shares?
Sure. And there are definitely, you know, some cities around the state that have been, you know, looking for this kind of opportunity. And so they could either make, you know, rooftops of public buildings available, or they could kind of, you know, encourage businesses and, you know, other, you know, institutions to have their rooftops available. And so there are, you know, so there will definitely be a role for municipalities. And again, they, another way that municipalities could participate is to say, hey, if somebody is developing a project, you know, municipalities are power users and utility customers, you know, we'll be an anchor tenant. You know, we'll, you know, take up to, you know, 30% or 40% of a project. And, you know, if a project has that kind of anchor tenant, then the financing for that project, you know, becomes a lot easier. And so there's a bunch of different ways that municipalities could be helpful and supportive to community solar projects.
You mentioned the possibility of being sort of a part owner of a community solar project, for example, where the actual array of solar, the PV system is out in Eastern Oregon or something. So this is really not about providing power to your house, but providing power somewhere and getting a credit on the bill. Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, that's a very good description. And so that is you know, a difference from having solar panels on your roof, where you're directly consuming what's coming, you know, the electrons that are coming out of that system. And then what you don't use is put out onto the grid for, you know, for general use, if you will. With community solar, yeah, it is, you are basically causing green electrons to come onto the grid and increasing the amount of renewable energy resources. But, you know, those those electrons aren't coming from that project to your house, and that's just the way the grid works. And I think that this is a good time to also make a differentiation between community solar and the renewable energy options that customers of Pacific Power and also Portland General Electric have, where you can pay a little bit more on your electric bill for renewable energy, and you are supporting renewable energy projects and basically cleaning up the overall energy pool, if you will. But you're not, you're paying a little extra, but you're not seeing anything on your bill. You're just basically increasing the renewable energy, beyond what the utilities are required to do. And the utilities, don't see any more from that. They're just kind of a pass-through to help their customers support renewable energy. Those will continue and are very useful programs, but the difference with community solar is that you're actually participating in a specific project and you're getting credit for your share of the output of that project, and you're seeing that as a bill credit on your bill.
So if you own 20% of a community solar project, which sounds a little high, I admit, but if you own 20% of it, then 20% of the credits will come to you.
That's right. And okay. So the rules say that, you're limited to, you can't participate in community solar beyond your usage. And so it kind of keeps some of that, net metering, that you can't overproduce and, go into business as a power seller. You're basically trying to offset your own usage.
So your bill won't go below zero, your electric bill?
If you have, likely not. Even when you're a community, even if you're a net metered customer with panels on your roof, it's unusual for a system to, generate more than your usage. And it could happen every now and then, but it's just by a little bit, and then the overage goes into a low-income fund. And if that happened within community solar, the same result would happen, is that the overage would go to support low-income customers' participation in community solar.
Community solar is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Jeff Bissonette is the executive director of the Oregon Solar Industries Association. The Public Utilities Commission in Oregon recently released a set of rules to help implement the community solar law passed by the legislature a year ago. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We have a call here from Michael in Wonder. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, and good morning.
Hi.
Mr. Bissonette has been talking about rooftop solar, mm-hmm. but a photovoltaic system doesn't have to go on your roof. I have a roof that is shaded by a large tree, so I have a system that's built on the ground in my yard.
Okay. You can probably blame me for some of the rooftop discussion because I started out at that point. So, Jeff, give us a sense of how varied the installations of PV panels can be. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, and Michael is exactly right. There are instances where if the rooftop doesn't work for a residential system, you can definitely look at what's called a ground mount system. And so you put panels onto sort of racking that can be put into the ground and have the same effect. I think the one limitation there is the same limitation that that you see on the rooftop, is that if there's not an appropriate space for that ground-mounted system, you're still out of luck. So I'm fortunate enough to have a roof and a good solar resource, and so I have a small solar array on my roof. But if that wasn't the case, my yard is shaded enough and really not big enough to have both my garden and solar panels. So that is definitely a possibility. to have a ground mount residential system. But again, the same thing, if there's not room or shading or, you know, any number of factors, then, you know, the person would, I think, would still be interested in a community solar option.
So those are the physical constraints. Let's talk about some of the legal and rule-based constraints. Are there any places in Oregon where you would not be eligible for community solar, where they would not be possible in your community?
For community solar?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, the concept is so popular that there are a lot of utilities that are looking at it. Obviously, in Oregon, we have two types of utilities, private utilities or investor-owned utilities. Those are Portland General Electric, Pacific Power, and Idaho Power, which has a small service territory in the far eastern part of the state. And then the rest, and that covers about 70% of the customer base in Oregon. The rest of the service base or customers are served by consumer-owned utilities, and these are either municipalities that run their own electric, like the city of Ashland.
And EWEB.
And city of Forest Grove, city of McMinnville, Canby, those sorts of cities. You also have PUDs or People's Utility Districts, and there are about half a dozen of those in the state. And then there are also rural electric co-ops that are, you know, primarily, not totally, but primarily in the eastern part of the state. All of those are either, you know, the boards of those utilities are elected. Either the city council operates as the utilities board, much like the city of Ashland, or there's a separately elected board for the municipal utility, like the Eugene Water and Electric Board. Or the People's Utility Districts or PUDs board is publicly elected, and the co-ops, electric co-ops board is elected by its members. And so the thinking there is that if somebody's not happy with the utility's leadership, they can, you know, throw the rascals out and install new leadership and new decision makers. The COUs can basically do, you know, whatever they want. They can take a look at the community solar policy that the legislature passed for the private utilities, for the IOUs. Those are the rules that just were adopted by the Public Utility Commission, which oversees and regulates those private utilities. Or they can do, you know, they can do other things. And so really, if you're a customer of a consumer-owned utility, it's kind of up to you to go to your elected board and say, hey, we should do something like this, and, you know, create a program. So they have really a lot of flexibility, and it's the customers of IOUs that are really looking at the community solar policy and the rules that were adopted by the PUC.
All right. So, you know, in the likes of
what they're going to do.
All right. So, in the likes of Ashland or Eugene or one of the Coos Curry co-op on the coast, mm-hmm. the thing to do is to get to convince the boards of those utilities to get into solar.
Yep.
Not a community solar thing. So, in the states where there's already been community solar, and I noticed they're called solar gardens in some cases mm-hmm. too. And you mentioned Minnesota. I see Delaware, Maine, Massachusetts, New York, Vermont, Colorado, Washington. I mean, have there been some things learned that Oregon is trying to replicate, and maybe some things it's trying to avoid as well?
Yeah, I think if you look at California, which is obviously a solar leader overall nationally, it's generally recognized that community solar isn't working particularly well there, and some of that is because the bill credit rate is, you know, too low to really make it worth it for customers to participate, and so, you know, that's kind of been stalled out. In Minnesota, where they have a program that is, you know, generally working well, there was some starts and stops because they had sort of a run, if you will, on, you know, developers saying, oh, you know, we'd like to apply to do a community solar project, and all of a sudden, I mean, they just had hundreds and hundreds of megawatts in the queue for community solar, much more than they had expected, and so that sort of slowed things down. And so in Oregon, one of the things that we still have to work out is what the bill credit rate will be. We're being very clear that it has to be, can't be sky high, because that, wouldn't work and that would make things too expensive, but it has to be high enough so that, customers feel like, oh, I can see the value in doing community solar and in offsetting some of my bill. And so that's something that we still have to work on over the next couple of months, so that so the project developers know, the rate that, their eventual customers will see on their bill.
All right, so Jeff, we have just a little less than a minute left, and I have two final questions. How soon might this happen, and what might be the minimum buy-in for a community solar program?
How long is going to be? It's something of a question. There was a workshop last week for the PUC staff to explain the rules, answer questions. They thought as much as 2 years, and there was a lot of people that went, oh my gosh, that's a long time, so they'd like to see it shorter. In terms of, and we'll be working for that, in terms of the minimum buy-in, it's going to be kind of dependent on the project, but I think it's just going to be a couple of kilowatts. So from that to your total usage.
Okay, so some proportion of the existing bill you're paying.
Right.
All right. Jeff Bissonnette is the executive director of the Oregon Solar Industries Association, waiting and champing at the bit for the introduction of community solar in Oregon, which, as you heard, could be months to years away. Jeff, thanks for joining us today in The Exchange.
Thanks for your time.
All right, take it easy.